This is an RNZ podcast.
This is Media Watch. I'm Colin Peacock. This week, a fly-on-the-wall account of an attempt to take a newborn baby from a Māori whānau into care put Oranga Tamariki under the spotlight and also sparked claims of a stolen generation and a campaign calling for hands off our Tamariki. Now, those who saw it online were shocked, but it was far from the first time that this case and others like it had been aired in the media.
Oh, that's terrible. That is absolutely... Oh, Jesus.
But before that, politicians who dared to dispute the conclusions the media made from two completely contradictory political polls this week were dismissed as in denial. But is it actually our media who need to confront the contradictions in their use of polls?
This is News Talk ZB News.
It's 7 o'clock. I'm Joe Gilfillan. The Labour Party could govern alone, or it's had a sharp slide. That depends on which of tonight's political polls you believe. Both major television networks have released polls results at 6 o'clock.
That was News Talk ZB's news last Sunday, 1 hour after the two big TV networks both unveiled their latest political opinion polls simultaneously, and the very different results and wildly differing conclusions that they reached.
The News Hub Reid Research poll has the Labour Party up 3.3% to 50.8% and able to govern alone, and shows National down to 37.4%. Over on One News, the Colmar Brunton poll has National back in front on 44% and Labour down 6% to 42%. One aspect that is the same in both polls is the lack of popularity of National Party leader Simon Bridges.
Indeed it was. More on that later. ZB newsreader Joe Gilfillan ended that story at 7 last Sunday night, like this.
The very different results have reminded many of then outgoing Prime Minister Jim Bolger's words in 1993, bugger the polls.
And it was odd to hear a quote from a long gone Prime Minister in the news like that, a quarter of a century later. Though what Jim Bolger actually said back then, after winning an election against the odds, was bugger the pollsters. Now, coincidentally, straight after that bulletin on News Talk ZB last weekend, it was their history show, Total Recall, in which the host Frank Ritchie backed Bolger's take from 1993.
One News Colmar Brunton poll and the News Hub Reid Research poll, completely different. What does that tell us? That the polls are pretty much rubbish. Don't bother. Don't bother listening to them. The most important poll is on Election Day. There you go.
But what Frank Ritchie was advising you to ignore there was talked up in advance by News Hub last weekend as something you mustn't miss.
New Zealand has delivered its verdict on Simon Bridges, and it doesn't get much worse.
Under his leadership, National is in a tailspin. The party's popularity nosediving to a record low in our latest News Hub Reid Research poll, the poll that was the most accurate going into the 2017 election.
But now, many people are not so convinced about the accuracy of News Hub's polls, or that that so-called verdict on Simon Bridges would stand up in court, after the Colmar Brunton poll simultaneously released on TVNZ One News painted a very different picture.
National are back in front on 44, jumping up 4 from our last poll in April.
National has bounced back, TVNZ declared, when pushing a video of that One News report out on Facebook.
That big 44 for the National Party, that's going to shield Simon Bridges from any attacks on his leadership, for now at least.
Now, elsewhere in the media, the main story about these polls was just how far apart they were and whether either of them could be taken seriously. But the next day, News Hub and TVNZ both kept calm and carried on, strenuously ignoring the contradictory results of their rivals and their contrasting conclusions. Duncan Garner did introduce News Hub's AM show on Monday with this nod to the opposition's findings.
As you know, the latest News Hub poll has seen the National Party hit the dreaded 30s. And yes, we know other polls may tell a different story. It's the market.
But it wasn't clear what Duncan Garner meant by the market there, unless he meant the commercial market for polling itself. And when political scientist Dr. Bryce Edwards acknowledged the existence of TVNZ's contradictory poll on the AM show soon after, News Hub's website could only refer to it as a slightly less disastrous one released at the same time. Meanwhile, over on TVNZ's breakfast show on Monday morning, Jessica Mutch-McKay was sticking to her line that their numbers were good news for National and its leaders, and there were no other numbers to consider.
I think that's the thing with polls, and especially in the political world where we find them so exciting. They are a snapshot in time.
As it happens, one carefully framed to make sure no one else's numbers were in the same frame. But not everyone in the media was excited as Jessica Much-Mackay. NZME, publisher of The Herald and owner of talk station News Talk ZB, doesn't bother forking out for polls anymore this far out from an election. And one by one this week, the ZB on-air hosts bagged both TV polls big time. And the biggest bagging man was ZB's morning star Mike Hosking, who called them a waste of time.
It's a rot. It's a system that doesn't work anymore. They rely on landlines too much. No one's got landlines. You can't get hold of anybody. And there's increasing evidence, I suspect, that has people just basically telling the pollsters, even if they do get them on the phone, telling them some stuff they make up just for funsies. But you cannot argue with any credibility that one party's got 50%. Oh, whoops, no, they don't. They've got 42. One party's got 37. Oh, whoops, no, they don't. They have 44. Forget it.
But other media were not inclined to forget it. On Monday, Morning Report plaintively asked Dr. Bryce Edwards which poll might be wrong.
And that does happen with opinion polls.
So which one's the rogue?
Well, it's a bit unfair to sort of judge, but I
that's
I think,
what you're here for.
Well, I'd bet on the News Hub one that's favourable to the government because that's where the trends have been in the polls prior to last night.
And that question of which polls were right or wrong was asked all day on talk radio last Monday. On RNZ's 9 to Noon, the weekly politics pundit Stephen Mills, an executive director for Labour's preferred pollster UMR, said one of the polls would be right.
You can't explain this by timing or methodology or anything like that. One's right and one's wrong. And because it's mid-term, we don't know which one.
And Stephen Mills then went on to say this.
I think there's still nothing better. I mean, we can't go back to relying on pontificating editors or people talking to their taxi driver, on a trip in from the airport. But, they do need to be more cautiously treated. And we need more of them.
Spoken like a man deeply embedded in the polling business. But would more polls stop editors and pundits, in his words, pontificating? Stephen Mills was also one of several pundits this week who said we never see the most revealing opinion polling because that's kept under wraps by the political parties who pay for it. And with that in mind, Heather Duplessis-Allen invited the media's go-to pollster into the huddle on News Talk ZB's Drive Show.
Because you do polling for the National Party. Which of the polls last night was more accurate?
Well, I can't say that because that would be revealing what my polls for the National Party say, which I will say they're always the ones you should trust, but of course they're private polls. What we can say, though, is they can't both be correct.
Well, if David Farrer was that sure about the polls he supplies to National being more accurate, he really could have said which of the TV company's polls was most out of whack. Instead, he said sometimes pollsters just strike a bad sample of 1,000 people with a margin of error of about plus or minus 3%. But Heather Duplessis-Allen was clearly convinced that David Farrer's Courier Company polls and others commissioned by other political parties are more reliable than the ones the TV companies tell us about.
Look, I have a reasonable idea of what the political party's own internal polling is showing or what they're prepared to say it's showing. And it kind of seems both sides seem to be saying roughly about the same thing. Neither of these polls are actually totally right.
Well, there, Heather Duplessis-Allen acknowledged that her opinion on that was based on what the political parties are prepared to tell her about the polling that they paid for. Though when she spoke to the CEO of the parent company of Colmar Brunton, Jason Shoebridge of Cantor, he seemed to concede that political parties' polling by other pollsters is better than his.
That internal polling is not a long way away from what we said last night when you take into account the margin of error. We're surprised by the variance. I mean, we're assuming the internal polling is more accurate than the polling that either we do or Reid do, but there's no reason to assume that, of course, because they're using very similar methodologies.
Now, that same day, RNZ's Jesse Mulligan also called on David Farrer to ask him this.
What does your private political polling for the National Party show?
Yeah, well, I'm not allowed to reveal any poll that I do for clients because they own the poll, because that golden rule, they pay for it, etc. So you'd have to ask National those questions. It's the person who pays me that decides what happens to them.
But David Farrer did give out one interesting number, the rough price that the TV networks pay for their political polls.
The trouble is, for commercial media, they pay a lot of money for these polls. There's not much value in it for them to spend $10,000, $20,000 on a poll and then leave a news bulletin with, well, actually not much has changed.
And remember that next time you get a call from a Colmar Brunton or Reed Research TV pollster. It's costing somewhere between $10 and $20 for them to harvest the opinions that you surrender unprompted on the spot over the phone. On Monday, Jesse Mulligan on RNZ wound up with a final question for David Farrer. A good one.
When you hand the polling data over to the National Party, who gets to see it? And I'm really thinking about those backbench MPs who are trying to decide whether to stick with the leader, Simon Bridges, or start throwing in their support behind a Judith Collins.
But while David Farrer said that was a matter for the party which paid him for the political polls, the Herald's political reporter Claire Trevett reckoned that National MPs would want to see that stuff this week to work out whether either of the two TV polls was actually accurate.
Those results may be critical in determining Bridges' immediate future. They are delivered to the leadership team every Wednesday, but MPs are not shown the results every week. They are shown them once every sitting period. This week marks the start of this sitting period. If Bridges does not volunteer those results, MPs will, quite fairly, demand to see them.
So, if combined with the private party political polls, NewsHub and TVNZ might end up having a real political impact after all with their polls. Now, the job of Simon Bridges' deputy Paula Bennett could also be in the balance here, and she hit back at the AM show's Duncan Garner like this on Monday.
It is a great morning. You're having a bit of fun writing a new narrative, I noticed, for the National Party, and one that's got a lot of fiction in it.
And NewsHub's political editor Tova O'Brien wasn't happy to hear Paula Bennett say that. In an opinion piece on the NewsHub website the same day, she said Paula Bennett was in denial.
This isn't my narrative or NewsHub's narrative, as Paula Bennett claimed on the AM show this morning. Voters simply do not like Simon Bridges, and it's starting to hurt National.
But there really is a narrative in NewsHub's poll coverage that's pretty plain. For months, NewsHub has reported Simon Bridges as a dead man walking as leader after every poll, and Judith Collins ready to walk into the job. Tova O'Brien hyped up the poll in February as devastating and a game-changer for National, likewise in April. But the game remains the same now, and Simon Bridges still remains National's leader. On TV this week, Tova O'Brien said vultures were circling Simon Bridges, and online that he was the rotting head of a fish ripe for lopping off. But even when it's reporting the comments of people who say he's not about to lose his leader's job, NewsHub still makes it sound like Simon Bridges is already dead. Take this online NewsHub report, for example.
Dr. Edwards urged caution on predicting Bridges' days were numbered, even as nails are being hammered into his coffin.
And that sounds a lot like a pretty clear narrative to us. NewsHub and TVNZ alike are also obsessed with Simon Bridges' persistently poor preferred Prime Minister ratings in those polls. And NewsHub and TVNZ alike never say out loud how many in their sample of 1,000 people didn't know who should be Prime Minister or refused to answer the question. On Colmar Brunton's website right now, you find out that a whopping 1 in 3 of the sample for the most recent TVNZ poll didn't or wouldn't name a preferred Prime Minister. And between 2014 and 2018, the don't-knows in Reed Research's poll have wavered between 19 and 30%. So that means that for real people, the question is a lot less important than it is for TVNZ, NewsHub and their respective pollsters. When the spin-off this week asked for more data from NewsHub's pollsters Reed Research, they got this reply.
Reed Research was not at liberty to release more information to us due to its commercial relationship with NewsHub, but said it was confident its poll was correct.
So, just like the political parties polling for their own purposes, there's only so much that NewsHub and its hired pollster really wants the audience to know. Simon Bridges' low preferred Prime Minister ratings also sparked the now obligatory AM show poll of NewsHub's own audience, asking readers who should be the leader of National, Simon Bridges, Paula Bennett or Judith Collins. Again, a certain narrative at play there, you could say. And part of that is also the Judith Collins leadership denial follow-up story, which duly arrived on cue on NewsHub at 6 on Monday, introduced like this.
Judith Collins is playing down talk of a leadership coup after National's worst result in our NewsHub Reed Research poll in more than a decade. Despite more New Zealanders wanting Collins as Prime Minister than Simon Bridges, the Papakura MP is pledging loyalty to him. So, Tova, what is the outlook for Simon Bridges' leadership?
Tova O'Brien went on to concede that the dead man walking is still walking, in spite of her previous predictions.
Either way, he does seem safe for now. The National Party is in denial about our poll because it doesn't like the numbers, so it's basically sticking its fingers in its ears, singing la-la-la at the top of its lungs, pretending our poll doesn't exist.
And a lot of NewsHub viewers will be saying blah-blah-blah because they've heard it all before, off the back of polls hyped to the heavens on NewsHub at 6. After a full 24 hours of poll punditry, Lisa Owen on RNZ's Checkpoint also channeled the Prime Minister who confounded the pollsters a quarter of a century ago.
Former Prime Minister Jim Bolger once famously declared, "Bugger the pollsters."
And another response could be, "Bugger the TV broadcasters who want to make the politics all about them." Well, as we've heard there, plenty of critics of the pollsters this past week, and among them was former Labour Party President Mike Williams, who told the New Zealand Herald the opinion research industry is in crisis, and not just here. He told RNZ's panel as well that the polls didn't pick Britain's voting for Brexit, Americans electing Trump in 2016, or the outcome of the Australian federal election just last month.
All the polls taken up to the election were wrong, but so was one on the day. Now, that exit poll in Australia predicted a Labor win. Now, that means a significant proportion of the punters were walking out of the polling booth and telling lies about what they did half an hour ago. Yeah.
Well, watching that closely in Australia was Gavin White, formerly a pollster for the UMR company here in New Zealand and now the head of research at Australian polling company Essential Research in Melbourne. He also keeps a close eye on the polls here too. So does he think that this week's two contradictory polls on TV show the pollsters here have got problems for some of the same reasons?
I think the New Zealand polling industry faces some significant challenges, but it's certainly hyperbole to say that the industry is in crisis. I think you need to look at the fact that the same polls which are perceived to be off in 2019 in Australia were within 1%, 0.7% of the final two-party preferred result in Australia in 2016. Based on the New Zealand 2017 election, taking the polls from that one, my analysis based on that, and I'm not claiming special knowledge, I'm only using the polls to work that out, that was almost bang on with what the final result after special votes actually was.
There's going to be a form of inquiry into the performance of opinion polls, an outfit called the Association of Market and Social Research Organisations. One of the things that's in their terms of reference, to assess the adequacy of information provided to and by the media and other commentators about how polls were conducted and what the results mean. So does that mean there's a similar concern in Australia about the way the media are interpreting them and pushing them out to the audience?
Yeah, I think the concern there is that these polls were being talked about as predicting the result, as saying that Labor were almost certainly going to win, or was certainly going to win. While Labor were favoured to win, there was always a chance that the coalition were going to win because the polls were showing 51-49. It was always close.
But here in New Zealand, so the two main TV companies, I mean, when they reported their own polls, they literally didn't mention the other's poll, which was this very contradictory result in terms of party support. That's sort of silly, almost dishonest, isn't it? When quite clearly they contradict, you know, the very definitive conclusions that they're drawing.
Look, I get it when they're leading with their results, but later on, I think referring back and saying, look, there are multiple polls out there, let's be objective about what's out there. But in the 2011 context, there are three other polls being publicly released. Now, those polls are not being publicly released today. We don't get enough data points.
Well, here the other thing that both those organisations do is they report very heavily on the preferred Prime Minister ratings because we have an opposition leader who's under pressure after persistently polling low in the answers to that question. But almost a third of people in one of them, that's the News Hub poll by Reed Research, neither didn't know or refused to answer it. Doesn't that show that that result's not actually going to be very significant?
I strongly dislike preferred Prime Minister polling. I do it from time to time because we're asked to do it, but I don't think it tells you very much. It's inherently biased towards the incumbent Prime Minister. If you ever see a situation where the incumbent Prime Minister is behind the opposition leader, which I think the only time I can think of that happening is when John Key got in front of Helen Clark, that actually means that the government is in deep trouble. The other issue I have with the way that they're talking about the Simon Bridges, Judith Collins numbers is that what that poll tells you is that 94% didn't choose Judith Collins. 95% didn't choose Simon Bridges in that. So that actually tells us very little about how effective either of those would be.
In addition to all this, the polls, the TV polls ask specific questions about topical issues. So, for example, we have the upcoming cannabis referendum. Both polls ask questions about that. Also, the budget, which we just had here. Those questions, aren't those much more useful? And TV companies would be better focusing on the results of that rather than the election that we're not having tomorrow?
Well, I think that's actually a very good point. Because often when they report on political polls in New Zealand, it's all about the horse race between National and Labor. And the truth was that both of those polls showed that National was a fair way off being able to form a government, and the only plausible government was a left government. So there was no story, but the focus was on the horse race. I actually much prefer polling on specific issues. If you've got, say, 60% support of proposition, 20% oppose it and 20% are unsure, then you can feel pretty comfortable that more people support that proposition. It's when we start getting into, oh, one side's on 44 and the other's on 42, how comfortable can we really feel about one being in front of the other?
And Gavin, political parties do their own political polling that they commission and pay for. And we've heard a lot of that this past week, journalists and pundits alike saying actually these ones are probably better than the likes of the polls TVNZ and News Hub broadcasting on their 6pm bulletins. We just don't know the details because the party only releases the bits to journalists or directly themselves that they want the public to know about. Do these things they pay for have bigger samples, better samples, more detailed questions?
They're more frequent. They don't have bigger samples, in my experience. I don't know enough about National Party polling. But certainly what I have seen, they don't have bigger samples, but they're taken more often. And that means you have more results to look at. If you take the two examples that have been out in the last week, the two public polls, now, neither Reed Research nor Colmar Brunton have any way of seeing whether that poll is a rogue poll, whether there's something funny going on. If they're only doing polls every 2-3 months, it's much harder for them to judge, hey, are these giving us good results? And they do come at a significant cost.
Yeah, the National Party pollster David Farrer reckoned TV companies would be spending somewhere between $10,000 and $20,000 on each one.
Oh, at least. If they're doing telephone-based polling, yeah, I think that's conservative. This is another challenge that New Zealand political polling faces that Australian polling doesn't, the availability of online samples. New Zealand, the online samples are not as good as they are in Australia. You're restricted to telephone-based polling, whether that's calling landlines, calling mobiles, and you've got what's called robo-polling. The first two are called by live people. The second one is a recording, and I saw a few of those being released in New Zealand prior to the last election. The Colmar Brunton poll are doing 50-50 landline and mobile. Now, they have made a choice when they've created that methodology. Each of those organisations is trying to come up with a methodology that will work best.
The newspaper companies here that don't pay for the polls anymore, if the TV companies followed suit and dropped it as well, would the audience really be any worse off? Because I guess the political parties will still keep doing their own political polling and releasing and leaking messages from that suit their purposes.
And which will not necessarily be accurate. If the media were not releasing polls for the public, there would be other content being created. There was the Tauranga Boys High, I think it was, poll.
People still talk about that in fond terms, yeah.
Yeah, in fun terms, but it gets used as semi-credible. One of the so-called polls that was used here was a crocodile, which piece of meat it chose. And what you would get is you would get political parties and other interested bodies, those who have a lot of money to put into this sort of thing, would be in a better position to run the polls. They would be releasing the information they like.
That was Gavin White, formerly a pollster for the UMR company here in New Zealand, now head of research at Australian polling company Essential Research, talking to me there from Melbourne. Last Wednesday, the New Zealand Herald's publisher NZME had its AGM and it announced that more than 10,000 customers had already signed up for its digital subscriptions just 6 weeks after it launched them. And that meant that NZME had already met the target set for its first year for converting formerly freeloading online readers into paying customers. Now, some of those people would be those who already subscribe to their local paper and they get the Herald's premium content now online for no extra cost. The AGM was told about one in five of those people have already taken up the offer. But the extra online income from the rest of them will go at least quite a way towards meeting the setup costs of the premium content project, estimated at just over $1 million last year. So no wonder then that the Herald illustrated its story with a photo of the company's CEO, Michael Boggs, smiling broadly, even if the share price for NZME on the NZX remains stubbornly low for now. Now, some shareholders at the AGM also complained about the quality of some of the Herald's news and content on the website for those who can't see the stuff now only available to subscribers. And on Midweek Media Watch this week, Jeremy Rose talked to Karen Hay about the two-tier system that's developed when it comes to the opinion and analysis pieces published online by the Herald. Rants are free, but facts come at a price, he concluded. That's on the Media Watch page of the RNZ website and the RNZ app, or Media Watch's podcast feed if you want to catch up with that. Another thing Jeremy Rose looked at on Midweek Media Watch last Wednesday was New Zealand's own Taken Generation, a fly-on-the-wall-style online documentary by newsroom.co.nz. Over 45 minutes, the video captured an alarming attempt over 2 days by Oranga Tamariki, social workers, DHB staff and police officers to enforce a court order to take a new baby from a 19-year-old Māori mother in Hastings Hospital. And as the hours went by, she clung to her newborn son to try and keep hold of him.
Everyone knew another day would bring another battle. No one more than midwife Jean Tahuia, she's seen it over and over.
We're always trying to defend a mother or a partner. You know, they have already become victims of circumstance.
The voice there of midwife Jean Tahuia, who, along with the documentary's maker Melanie Reed, emerged as a key presence in the story. New Zealand's own Taken Generation is a strikingly intimate and up-close account of what went on behind closed doors in that hospital over those 2 days. And when Melanie Reed and cameraman Phil Prendeville couldn't be there in the room, whānau members, coached by the pair, captured the standoff on their cell phones. Within 2 days, a group called Hands Off Our Tamariki had been formed, led by social workers and academics, who fired up a petition signed by more than 10,000 people so far. And on Friday morning, there was another case of a child in care being moved in upsetting circumstances, leading RNZ's First Up show.
A Samoan couple say Oranga Tamariki gave them less than 48 hours' notice that their foster daughter of almost a year would be uplifted. They say they've tried repeatedly to apply to be the permanent foster parents for their six-year-old foster daughter, who we will call Sarah. But we're told by a supervisor they couldn't apply because they weren't white.
And that case was covered live by RNZ's Indira Stewart on Morning Report later on.
It all happened within a matter of minutes. I can't describe how heavy the atmosphere was as the parents, the foster parents and the other children in the home carried the boxes and bags, her belongings that they'd been packing all morning, into the car.
And later that morning, some Morning Report listeners were clearly alarmed by what they'd heard.
A lot of feedback coming in this morning on the sudden removal of a Pākehā girl from her Samoan foster parents. Rose says, talk about institutional racism. To take a vulnerable child from loving foster parents where she has flourished and put her with strangers because she is white. And the foster parents is not is cruel.
Now, all this put the spotlight not just on individual cases of child welfare overseen by Oranga Tamariki, but also policies on racial background and whānau connections. And according to Jean Tahuia, the leader of Ngā Mai Māori Midwives Aotearoa, babies are taken from Māori mums in maternity wards at a rate of about 3 a week these days. And last Tuesday, Melanie Reed told RNZ's Story Behind the Story podcast The Detail that this made it not just a matter of welfare and justice, but a racial matter too.
Now, if you or I took our baby into hospital with a broken arm, do you think that SIFs, or Oranga Tamariki as they're now called, would come and uplift our kids? I bet you they wouldn't.
Now, not for nothing is an order to take a newborn issued by a court, and the newsroom report sparked debates like this one on the AM show on 3 the day after it was published online.
Give this whānau a chance, and actually the baby, nothing had happened to the baby yet, and it's like there's just a lack of trust and a lack of honesty.
Are there homes? I mean,
imagine if something was to happen to that baby. Imagine if something happened to that baby in the care of the
something
mother.
Something is happening to that baby. That baby is being taken.
Stuff happens.
Who would we be blaming? Who would we be pointing the finger at? It would be Oranga Tamariki every time.
And AM show host Mark Richardson went on to wonder aloud whether this case was typical.
We're now pointing the finger at the process based on one case that we've had a look at in isolation. Does this represent the process, or is this an isolated case that has gone wrong?
I've read things, and these are from people who have been ripped from their families, and they are saying it is the stolen generation. They're saying it is not one-off. Their experience is very similar.
But Newsroom's Melanie Reed told The Detail that the report wasn't meant to be a comprehensive weigh-up of the entire system of care for vulnerable children in New Zealand.
I believe that my job is to show some transparency of what is really going on behind closed doors. And so there was only one way to do that, was to get behind those closed doors so that New Zealand could see what is really happening with these uplifts. So if I've upset a few agencies along the way, then I'll wear that.
Well, she certainly achieved that. Pushback came in the form of a legal challenge when Oranga Tamariki engaged former broadcaster Linda Clark, who's now a partner at the law firm Kensington Swan, to try and get the family court to order Newsroom to alter its documentary, in order, they said, to protect the baby's identity. And ironically, Linda Clark was only recently appointed to the board of the government's broadcasting funding agency, New Zealand On Air, which funded that Newsroom documentary and others by Investigations editor Melanie Reed. Now, Newsroom rejected that claim that it had jeopardised the baby's identity, and the family court declined Oranga Tamariki's request. But after that, the Oranga Tamariki chief executive, Greiner Moss, then appeared on the AM show to defend her ministry and its staff. She wouldn't answer specific questions about the Hawke's Bay Hospital case, but was pretty specific about what she thought of Newsroom's report.
But I think what you are seeing there is apparently 36 hours of footage cut down to 40 minutes. So I would say it is a very significant misrepresentation of the total story. Okay, so
and Greiner Moss said that again 5 minutes later.
This story then, by the Newsroom, in your opinion, irresponsible and gratuitous.
I think it's a significant misrepresentation of the work that we do. It's also, I question how it is helping that mother and that baby.
She wasn't asked and didn't say just how Newsroom's report had misrepresented a situation, which on the face of it was far from best practice. Her claim was firmly rejected also by Newsroom's Melanie Reed.
Investigative journalists such as myself sigh yet again as they roll out the significant misrepresentation line and throw that into the public arena. It's as predictable as night turns to day. The disturbing reality is there for everyone to see on the video, and the ministry would be better served to assess itself and improve as an agency rather than try and defend the indefensible.
Now, Oranga Tamariki's chief executive did commit to reviewing what Melanie Reed's video report revealed about the handling of that case. On Thursday, 3's show The Project tackled the topic like this.
Home for the three girls, Maud!
The stolen generation, a phrase steeped in horror and fear. It refers to the shameful episode in Australia when children were ripped from their families. Now there are suggestions similar things are happening in New Zealand.
But it's not only now that this is being suggested, as the project put it there. But while many journalists, commentators and even politicians have expressed shock and alarm about this happening in New Zealand in 2019... it's hard to see why. Over the past 2 years, Melanie Reed has done a series of stories for Newsroom about children being removed from families by police acting on court orders. This one, for example, from 2017, also features confronting cell phone video from family members at the heart of it.
They're taking her away.
My God, I
Oh, that's terrible. That is absolutely Oh, Jesus.
Otago University Law Professor Mark Hennigan reacting there to shocking images in that newsroom report, and there were plenty more where that came from. And Jean Tahuia has been talking about this issue in the media for some time too. 6 months ago, an investigation was published by Stuff, which began like this.
In delivery rooms around New Zealand, the state is removing baby after baby. A Stuff investigation has found more children are born into care than at any other time in the past decade, with around 5 babies a week now separated from their mothers. Most of these pepe are Māori.
And the actual case depicted in the newsroom documentary, which had such an impact this past week, has already been reported too. Newsroom's Melanie Reid reported it at the time back in early May for Newsroom, but without the startling video, and Stuff republished her story to a far bigger online audience. RNZ reported at that time that the number of Māori newborns taken into state care rose from 110 in 2015 to 172 last year. And at that time, Jean Tahuia told the Māori News Network Radio Wātea this.
I believe every whānau member should rally around their young mum at delivery suite, should sit in the corridors and should stand in the rooms and should hold their pepe when it's born and not let it go.
Now, whether this situation really parallels Australia's stolen generations in years gone by is a matter of interpretation, and whether the court-ordered uplifts are justified and whether Oranga Tamariki staff are carrying them out properly is a matter for debate and investigation by those who really know the facts. It's hard for journalists and the public alike to form an understanding of that from media eyewitness accounts of individual cases at the point where the distressing removals are happening, such as we've seen this week from Newsroom and RNZ. But the nature of the problem and the scale of it are no secret now, thanks to the media exposure, which goes back much further than this past week. But perhaps it's the startling scenes in Newsroom video this week which show New Zealanders still have to see it, to believe it, and to respond. Well, that's all we have for you in Media Watch this weekend, but the Media Watch team will be back again with Midweek Media Watch at about 10:30 next Wednesday night with Karen Hay on The Lately Show. And then we're back again with Media Watch at the same time next Sunday here on RNZ National.